RadioArchives.com presents Dead Man's Plunder, An Adventure of the Black Bat by G. Wayman Jones, read by Milton Bagby. Out of the night comes a menacing winged figure, the Black Bat. Blind District Attorney Tony Quinn takes his battle for justice from the courtrooms to the streets, prowling the city skyline as the Black Bat. His prey, criminals who live beyond the reach of the law. Masked, cloaked like a gigantic bat, and able to see in pitch darkness, the Black Bat is assisted by hulking Butch O'Leary and former con man Silk Kirby, as well as the resourceful Carol Baldwin, the daughter of the lawman who donated his eyes so that Tony Quinn could resume his war against the underworld. A war to the death, fought with scientific skill and blazing 45 automatics. Operating outside the law, the Black Bat is relentlessly hounded by police captain McGrath, who suspects that the blind DA is really the human bat who breaks laws in order to uphold justice. And now, the Black Bat's thrilling adventure, Dead Man's Plunder. Chapter 1. Police Procedure. Sergeant Lanigan of the radio patrol pressed the apartment door buzzer once more. He could hear the clamor of it inside, but nobody came to answer. He turned to a pop-eyed little man who tenanted the next door apartment.
"You're positive you heard voices in there, and later on a scream? I don't want to crash any doors unless I have to. And it happens that the building super isn't around, so I can't get hold of a key."
The little man nodded violently.
"I did hear voices. Mrs. Titus and that of a man. I was listening to the Jester's show. It ended, and I turned the radio off. Before I had my hand away from the dial, I heard the scream. Just one."
"Was it cut off all of a sudden?" Lanigan asked.
"Just like I snapped off the radio," the tenant insisted. "I listened a little while. I didn't hear another sound, so I thought I'd better phone the police."
Sergeant Lanigan glanced significantly at his patrolman driver. He stepped back, measured the door, and hurled himself at it, which was some hurling because Lanigan weighed better than 220. The door threw him back like a rubber ball. He signaled his partner, and both of them attacked it this time. One panel finally crashed through. Lanigan ripped the broken pieces of wood away to reach inside and find the snap lock, and at that instant he saw the sprawled-out body of the blonde girl on the floor. Lanigan wasted no time. Even as he turned the snap lock, though, he noted that the night bolt and the burglar chain were both off. Then he was bursting into the living room. It was one of those large, expensive places fitted out by an interior decorator who went in for formal coldness in his decorations, though they were not as cold as that body on the floor was going to be. Lanigan merely touched the wrist for a pulse and found none. He noticed the brutally inflicted marks around the throat. It had been a lovely throat, too. Mrs. Phyllis Titus had been around 30, an icy blonde, but even in death, as beautiful as anyone Lanigan ever saw. She was dressed in a light suit of natural gabardine, fitting a trim, tall figure. Her makeup had been skillfully applied and was intact. A large diamond guard ring and a diamond-studded wedding band were on the fourth finger of her left hand. There was a jewel-encrusted wristwatch on her wrist, and the white blouse beneath the suit was held at the throat by another diamond pin. Whoever had killed her certainly could not have been a thief.
"Mike," Lanigan said, "stand right here and don't touch anything."
Lanigan went over to the telephone and dialed.
"This is Sergeant Lanigan, 19th Precinct Radio Patrol," he said. "Give me homicide. I found a little job for them."